wrapping up all the previews, so we had to save one of the best for last. We got the Western League preview coming at you right now in the City Conference, arguably one of the best leagues in San Diego County. It rivals the Avocado League, the Grossmont Hills League, you know, the Metro Mesa, probably the four top dog leagues, if you ask me. But I know for a fact that my man to my right here, Mr. Top Dog, Chris Smith, has something to say about how great the Western League is. First of all, Chris, thanks again for joining me. The last one of the before we start ready to play real football.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you guys having me on and talking high school football here in San Diego.
Yeah, let's get into it. I know we're talking off air. You roll in here, you're like, I don't need any notes. I don't got anything that prepared because this is the Western League, and this is a fun league to talk about. Let's get into it. Cathedral Catholic, Madison, Lincoln, Point Loma, St. Augustine. You know, three of the teams right now stick out because they are top five teams right now in the county, you know, according to the Union Tribune and a lot of rankings all over the place. What excites you most about the Western League this year?
They got talent. I mean, if you go back and look last year, I think they were the only division in San Diego to win both the Open, D1, and Division II. And they won three championships in CIF. So to have three of those teams in one central division, I mean, it's impressive.
It's pretty impressive. And then just, you know, the city conference, because we've been breaking down, me and you, the city conferences in general, the season that they had last year, not only winning the first, you know, Open D1 and D2, but winning like D3 and D4 all the way down, for the most part, kind of almost a clean sweep for the city league. You have to like that for the city interconference, especially over the last like 10 years or so when they maybe haven't been winning as many championships.
Well, I mean, everybody's pretty much said, you know, the Avocado is the best league in San Diego. But, you know, last year they didn't have any championships, and the city conference had five championships. And I think that's actually a record for one conference to have five CIF championships coming out of one conference. And it really is. I think it speaks to the volume of how dedicated our coaches are here in the city conference and how, you know, competitive our players are, how better the programs are turning around to be.
You get a lot of kids, you know, staying in their neighborhoods. You got a lot of kids staying home, and the talent is not all going to one school anymore. It's kind of like spreading out, and now you're getting a lot of teams that are very even in caliber instead of like maybe the one dominant city league team.
Absolutely. I think that when you start spreading out some of the talent around, amongst Lincoln, San Diego, Morris, you start spreading around the entire city conference, the elevation of play across the entire conference goes up. And I think back in the years past, you'd have, you know, 5, 6, 7 D1 guys end up at one school. Well, now they're kind of spreading that love around a little bit more. And, you know, I think it's a level playing field down there.
So we've been talking about the city conference, but let's get into the Western League. That's the top dogs of the city conference. Starting with Cathedral Catholic, we go in alphabetical order throughout these podcasts. They come in, you know, 12-2 a year ago. Their JV team went 10-0. Their JV team last year only gave up 2 touchdowns in the entire season, which is kind of remarkable that any team could do that in an entire season, let alone a JV football team. Notable wins last year, of course, Torrey Pines in the Open Championship, Narbonne in the Southern California Regional, and then St. Augustine, one of the league games for them. They lost 2 games last year, one of them being a state championship game, the last game of the year, and one of them being the first game of the year for them, La Costa Canyon, a year ago. Their opening rating is a 57.2. They do return 13 of their 22 guys from a year ago, most notably their offensive line. Overall, before we start getting into their schedule, what is your synopsis on Cathedral Catholic?
Nothing's really going to change for Cathedral. I mean, they are a running team. They're going to run the ball. They're going to run the ball some more. And guess what? They're going to run the ball even more. They've got a dominant offensive line. They got a quarterback that's a great conductor of the offense. You got 4 legitimate running backs over there. A couple guys like Lucky Sutton and nobody's really even seen on the varsity level yet. They just keep reloading and reloading and reloading. The JV team, I got to say, you're a little partial, I think, but because you coach over there. But with that said, there's a lot of guys that are going to be plug and play. You know, so if one guy goes down, they've got incredible amount of depth at the offensive line, the defensive line, the linebacking core. I think they've got probably the best linebacking core between Jordan Allen and Devin Dye over there. There's not a lot of holes to this team. And I mean, until you beat the big dog, you can't be the big dog.
There's a little bit of a question mark in terms of how dominant they were when they had Sean Poma as compared to how poor they were when they did not have Sean Poma, and we'll see how much of a factor that plays into it, because Sean Poma is a hell of a high school football player from a year ago. He didn't play for them 2 years ago. They went 5-7. The first game against La Costa Canyon, he missed 3 quarters and they lost. So you can say what you want about, you know, being able to retool, but they're going to eventually have to get over the hump of not having Sean Poma, and that starts tomorrow against La Costa Canyon. I know they have a lot of guys that can play running back. How do you see that working out in terms of trying to replace a guy like Sean Poma? Because last year was telling the year of the running back. I think somebody came up with that potentially in this room. There's a lot of teams that have to replace a lot of good running backs this year. Cathedral Catholic is one of them.
I mean, you can't replace Sean Poma. That's just it. The kid was a remarkable athlete.
Jamon Clendon,
right?
Keenan Christian.
It's really difficult when you get those D1 caliber running backs that are you know, home run threats. But I mean, if you look at the way Cathedral is looking at things right now, you know, the kid that came over from Point Loma, Christian Hall, great running back over there. You've got another shifty running back that plays both ways. And Matt Bryant, You've got Xavion Watson, who will pound the rock, and then here comes Lucky Sutton, who looks like a grown man already, and I think he's only a sophomore. So, I mean, it's kind of running back by committee. I think that at some point in the season, one of those guys is going to stand out, make themselves the running back, and the other guys are going to stand behind him and give a change of pace back, if you will.
The most interesting thing is going to be the offensive line. You know, they lost Ross Masauli. He's no longer at Cathedral anymore. But the fact that they could just plug and chug and still have a really good line is really remarkable. Downsides, probably not a lot of depth in terms of defensive line. They're going to have to replace a lot of guys on the defensive line. And as much guys as they have coming back, defensively, they're still really young. They have a lot of seniors on their defense, but, you know, aside from Jordan Allen, Devin Dye, you got, you know, Jackson Moy, he's coming back, kind of, because he played in the state championship game as a freshman. He's going to be a stud, but he's
going to be a stud. He already is a stud.
He's an underclassman. You got to replace a defensive lineman that they, you know, you don't have a Miles McCormick anymore. You don't have a Trevor Ray anymore. Outside linebackers filling in, you know, Joe Sprague's getting some work, but he doesn't have a lot of varsity time. The whole secondary, besides Deshaun Swafford, are a lot of guys that did not get a lot of playing time last year either. And then who's going to plug in next to Devin Dye tomorrow against LCC? You have Michael Nadell, and you also have Luke Otonero, the brother of Nick Otonero, who just played, you know, a year ago for Cathedral.
Now, I'm going to say this, and I hope Luke doesn't get mad about this. I think Nick's actually probably a little better linebacker than his older brother. I mean, I got to see him last year on JV, and that kid was flying around,
Luke,
smacking people in the mouth. Phenomenal young man, and I think he's not going to have a problem stepping up to varsity. I think the kid's ready.
I think he's ready, too, and I got to see this team up close a lot. You know, I'm part of the program a little bit, and I'm an alumni as well, so I get to see him. Luke Otonero is a hell of an athlete, and he played a lot of running back last year on JV and was pounding kids, so that's another guy that you can add to the mix.
Another option,
Another option you could potentially give the ball to.
I wonder if Coach Doyle's listening to this right now.
He's not listening right now. Maybe in a couple hours or so, he might be able to tune into this podcast, of course. Let's go through the schedule. They got LCC first, revenge game for them. It's at home. You know what? They had a scrimmage this year, Cathedral did, so who knows if they come out of the gate strong or not. But that's a game that Cathedral really wants, but you know what? That LCC team's still pretty good, and it's not going to be a walk in the park. Then they got Saguaro from Arizona in the Honor Bowl next Saturday. Then they got Centennial from Corona, a dominant team all the time, at Helix, at Eastlake, Otay Ranch, and then they get into league play, which is, you know, going to be difficult with Lincoln and Saints and, you know, even Madison and maybe Point Loma. That might be one of the best schedules, you know, and toughest schedules in San Diego County.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to running back coach over there, Barry Winston. We were talking about that schedule in the offseason, and I asked him candidly, why the heck would you put Corona Centennial on your schedule, coach? And he says, look, you know, we're not afraid of competition. You know, our guys get up for big games, and they want to play the best, and they believe that in order to be the best, you got to beat the best. So I don't think they're going to have a lot of trouble this year. I think that they've gelled as a team. I think that this team is a lot more mature than outsiders. You know, they say that they're young, per se, but they really play well together, so I don't see them having any trouble. I think maybe 8-2, 9-1. I do see them as an open division team.
I think they're an open division team as well. I have them going 8-2. I think they lose the Corona Centennial. Centennial usually has a line the Cathedral has, but they have five guys at least, maybe six or seven that can fill in and rotate through. And they're going to have that and a defensive line in terms of, and not all those guys are going to play both ways. They're going to have an entire defensive line, an entire offensive line, where Cathedral might have to have guys go both ways. That, to me, is a tough game. I also think Helix is a team that can get them. In terms of San Diego teams that could beat Cathedral, I think Helix is one of them, and I think St. Augustine's a close second behind Helix that could potentially sneak up and bite Cathedral this season. Like I was saying on other podcasts, I never pick anybody to go undefeated. I never pick anybody to lose all 10 games, although I have done that this year just because of certain circumstances and what have you. But to me, this team is 8-2. I think they go 2-2 against Saguaro, Centennial, Helix, and Saints.
I mean, that's a pretty fair estimate. I mean, you know, Saints is a very, very, very talented team. So if they did lose that game, I mean, the Holy Bowl, which no Cathedral person wants to hear, they're going to lose the Holy Bowl. So.
Well, I don't know. They don't have the stats on their side right now because the home team has not won since 2011 when I played as a junior at home. The home team has not won, and Cathedral's hosting this year. So I don't know if that's extra mojo for Saints, but if Saints continues the tradition and upsets Cathedral in the grand scheme of things for the season, or Cathedral breaks the streak of the home team losing.
That's an interesting storyline.
Yeah, look at that. That's fun. I even got my Holy Bowl shirt
on. I see that. 11-11-11.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what, your sophomore year, junior year?
That was my junior year, actually. Okay. So I think we're in agreement. 8-2 is probably around the range we think Cathedral's going to be. If they have a really poor season, I think it's 6-4.
Now, before we move on for Cathedral, I want to say one thing. Last year, I did predict them to go undefeated, and they came out against LCC and lost the first game of the year.
That's what you get for picking a team that's undefeated. If San Diego High loses tomorrow, it's your fault.
No, I think I said Sarah, didn't I?
No, you said San Diego High would go undefeated.
Oh, okay.
I got the tape.
Okay.
We can bring it up.
All right. Well, to all the Dons out there listening, please go out there and win the first game this year. I mean, you had a scrimmage. Let's not repeat last year. Let's go ahead and win that first game.
All right. So we got Cathedral at 8-2, and one of the top dogs in the league. Madison, this gets to an interesting conversation, is when you get to the Madison Moorhawks. 6-5 a year ago. I think they kind of underachieved with the talent that they had. They had a lot of D1 guys, and they had a lot of ability. They did have to replace a lot of linemen last year, and we've had this conversation multiple times about if you don't have linemen and you're going against teams that do have linemen, you're probably not going to have a good time. Their JV team last year, 6-4, watched them play. They're a pretty solid JV squad. They beat Saints last year. That was an incredible game with the lightning delay, and then they remade it, and then a chuck up to the end zone with an instant replay on the PPR and got the toe tap in there for the win. They beat Point Loma and Rancho Bernardo. Those are their three best wins a year ago. Their three worst losses, of course, losing to Grossmont in the playoffs is not a good loss. If there's any good losses, by the way. Losing to Mira Mesa was kind of shocking, I think, in that term as well. Losing to Lincoln, I didn't think was that big of a shock, but they did lose to Lincoln last year as well. 10.5 rating coming in. They got 8 guys returning out of 22. One of the big guys coming back, Keontae Spriggs.
It's not just Keontae. I mean, they're going to have a balanced attack at running back this year. I call them lightning and thunder. You got Herman Smith and Keontae Spriggs. Arguably, Keontae is the best running back in San Diego County right now, hands down. And he could be the best overall football player. Having Herman there is going to take some of the pressure off of Keontae to be the guy, and it's going to give him a balanced running game. Herman had, I think it was a 62-yard scrimmage run, touchdown run against Patrick Kenny in the scrimmage. He looks poised to play. He plays both sides of the ball, safety and running back. Now comes my question marks. They've got a really, really young quarterback, and that's where I start to get a little nervous because I watch him a 7-on-7, and I'm not sure he's ready for the big games. You know, he's still really, really young. He's like 15 years old. So maybe that inexperience at quarterback make him to bite him in some of those tougher games. Their offensive line, I mean, they got one of the best linemen in San Diego with Josh Simmons, and that kid is incredibly dominant. So I think they're going to use him effectively to run the ball really well. Some of the passing game concerns me a little bit, and maybe some of the corner play.
Yeah, this team to me, the other thing too, you know, we always break down the schedules. Their schedule's not easy.
Right.
They open up at Rancho Bernardo. I think they win that game. Rancho Bernardo is kind of on the up in terms of ability. Then they have Steel Canyon, who a lot of people think is arguably the second most talented team in San Diego behind Lincoln, just talking about skill position talent-wise. Then they have Granite Hills, who's also on the up. They had a really good season last year, and they look to return a lot of guys from last year and on the JV team. Palos Verdes, who gave them a hard hard time last year at Grossmont, who beat them last year, Lincoln, who beat them last year, Cathedral, who beat them last year, at Point Loma, of course, at St. Augustine, and then at Mira Mesa, who also beat them last year. The schedule doesn't really play into their favor.
No, I would agree. I mean, I think they're a 3-7, 4-6 at best. I think this would be the first losing record that Madison's had in a while.
Yeah, I'm around the 3-7 at worst, 2-8, but at best probably 4-6, kind of that range for the Madison Warhawks. You know, because their freshman team wasn't very good last year either in terms, but I heard their incoming freshman class is not bad.
I'll take your word for it.
Come on, you're supposed to be top dog. You're supposed to know every single level of every single team in San Diego. Throwing you through a loop. Hey, you said no notes, so I try to pull a fast one on you with the freshman Madison team. I don't know. I haven't seen them either. The stories that I've heard. Moving on to the most talked about team over the summer, of course, the Lincoln Hornets. They come in 11-5 a year ago. They won a CIF championship last year. JV team went 7-3. They beat San Diego High. They beat Granite Hills. They beat Mira Mesa. Lost to Point Loma Saints and Cathedral, so they lost to the two top dogs, and then they kind of lost a fluke game to Point Loma. They enter with a 32.4 rating, returning 12 of their 22 guys, but they get a lot of transfers in. You know, we'll see what happens in terms of Xavier Hamlet when he can return after getting nicked up in the scrimmage game in the SDFNL Classic against San Marcos, but I like this Lincoln team. They're very talented on paper. You were talking about how they actually have some linemen to help them out this year for the first time in a long time. That's always been kind of the knock on Lincoln. It's like they have all these skill guys, but they can't either get in the ball or they can't protect their quarterback enough to be efficient. I think that fact of having better linemen, I think the transfers in is going to be a huge help. I think their schedule for the most part should help them out. They do have to play Eastlake and San Clemente are two pretty tough games for them, and traveling up to San Clemente is a long bus ride for anybody as well. I like this Lincoln Hornets team. I think they go 7-3. I think they I don't think they beat San Clemente on the road, and I also don't think they beat the Catholic schools in their league.
Well, that doesn't leave much for me to say. Let me first start off by saying prayers up for Xavier Hamlet. I was right there when he got injured, and, you know, we wish him a speedy recovery, first and foremost. Secondly, watching this team, this isn't the same Lincoln team that from years past. And, you know, everybody screams, oh, they're a 7-on-7 team. Oh, they can only play 7-on-7. Yeah, I probably wouldn't say that this year. I mean, they had a D-line with Fontaine. I think Fontaine had 8 sacks in the first half against San Marcos. I had a couple phone calls and they asked me how the quarterback looked at San Marcos, and my response was, he looked okay when he was picking himself off the ground.
Exactly.
I mean, the reality of the situation is they got some dudes on the offensive line and the defensive line. I felt bad for, I think it was the defensive end, number 42 at San Marcos, because those two, the left tackle and the right guard, folded him in half and landed on him and pancaked him 5, 6, 7 times. And that's a big difference from a Lincoln team in the past. They do have a dominant offensive line, a dominant defensive line, arguably the very best secondary in all of San Diego County. And when you add on all those athletes out there, then you add Benjo O'Brien and you add Keyshawn Smith. If you double Benjo, Keyshawn's going to beat you over the top. If you double Keyshawn, they're going to go underneath. You don't need a strong arm or a superb quarterback in an offense like that. You take what the defense gives you. And so far, that's what they've been doing. And I just, it's going to be very, very difficult for teams to stop that passing attack. The caveat, I don't think they have a very good straight running game. You know, I had a chance to talk with Jason Carr, their offensive coordinator over there at Lincoln, and I told him candidly, you know, in order to beat the Cathedral teams or the St. Augustine team or even St. Clemente, you're going to have to be a little bit more balanced, and you're going to have to learn to run the ball. And I think they're aware of that, and I think they know that going into that. But I'm 100% agreeing with you that they lose to St. Clemente. They lose to St. Augustine, and they lose to Cathedral, and they finish the season 7-3.
If you finish the season 7-3, and your 3 losses are to an Orange County team and 2 private schools,
that's a
season. Hell of a year.
Yes,
I mean it is, and not just for Lincoln, but for anybody. That
Any
is
school.
A hell of a year,
especially a San Diego school,
especially a San Diego public school. To have that on their deal. I think they're better than Eastlake. I think they'll win that game. I think they'll hammer El Camino. Although El Camino is going to be better this year than last year, supposedly. I got to watch them a little bit in the scrimmage. They were more competent at moving the football. You know, with Armin. Marvin Trout back there and what have you. We'll see how long it it plays out for El Camino. But again, I think they start the season 3-0 against Monta Vista. Without Jamal McClendon, it's not going to be the same Monta Vista team. I was talking with Ron Hamamoto on one of our other podcasts, and he was frank. He was like, it's going to be impossible to replace him. You can't replace him. And he's like, when we were going in hammering people because they couldn't tackle McClendon, we can't do that anymore. So it's going to be like, we're going to kind of change our offense and do what we have. And to start with Lincoln week one after a great performance against San Marcos last week. Yeah, good
and
luck.
I think, I want to add something to that. I mean, we talk a lot about the explosive offense for Lincoln. I talk about that secondary, but arguably one of the best players in the county that flies around and makes tackles, and I anticipate he's probably going to have 20 tackles a game, and that's Marquise Allen Patman. I think he actually may end up being the defensive player of the year.
We saw him against Mira Mason, the CIF championship game here on 97 through the fan, and he was killing it. And that team was running down Tumbling like he wasn't fast, and they did a really good job defensively in that game. They did a good job offensively in that game. I'm interested to see this Lincoln Hornets team come to fruition and play this year, especially with all the 7-on-7 noise. My thing is 7-on-7 is different from football, but if you're good on 7-on-7, that doesn't mean you're not good at football, and if you're good at football, it doesn't mean you're not good at 7-on-7. I think it goes intertwined. It just depends on what type of team you have at the end of the day.
7-on-7 is a tool, and I don't think people understand that as much as they should. It's a tool for different character, different play development, getting your quarterbacks, your receivers on the same page, maybe teaching some of your secondary, different coverages and the cover guys. This argument versus football versus 7-on-7 really needs to end. I mean, the reality is it's a tool. Some teams use it, some teams don't.
I don't think like one's better than the other. I just still think it's different.
Yes.
It's just different. It's apples and oranges. The thing I think that makes people upset, and they just assume this all the time because they don't actually know, but like anytime a team loses in 7-on-7, what is their excuse?
Oh, we don't have pads on.
We don't have pads on.
Right. Where do we put pads on?
But like, let's just say if Southwest San Diego loses to Lincoln in passing league, they would still say that. I mean, this is like, it doesn't matter what the team is. They're still saying that. It's kind of like a crutch of an excuse. And sometimes it's true and sometimes it's not. I think the one time you can make the argument is when you have teams running plays that just don't exist.
What I mean
you're lining up next to the center and running crossing routes.
Yeah.
But that's not what Lincoln does.
Right.
Lincoln runs their offense.
Right.
Their offense is spread. Their offense does really well in 7-on-7. Now, if Cathedral was running a spread offense in 7-on-7 and they beat somebody, yeah, I'd be a little like, all right, were we going to do this in the game? Like,
right.
Are you really going to do this?
Right.
That's where my argument's like, all right, guys, let's tone it down on the 7-on-7. But if you like Lincoln and like Madison and Kearney and the teams that like running that spread offense go dominate 7-on-7 running their stuff, they're not just a 7-on-7 team. But if you got a team that usually runs a wing T or usually does something that doesn't do their stuff and goes and wins 7-on-7 tournaments and then goes 4-6 in the regular season.
Well, let me add an interesting stat for you that kind of goes along to what you're saying. 100% of the CIF champions last year made it to either a semifinal or a final of a 7-on-7 tournament last spring.
That's including
100%
Torrey Pines and Cathedral that are wing T offenses.
Yes, sir. 100%.
And guess what? They're running their stuff.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is. I've seen it all the time, even with like, I've been on the Cathedral sideline at a 7-on-7 tournament, and they beat a team that, maybe runs a spread, maybe they don't, and they go, well, if we got pads on, we would have beat you. It's like,
yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's just passing plays, all right? So if you're running your stuff, I'm cool 7-on-7. It's a great teaching goal. If you're just doing it to try to win 7-on-7 games and it's not to develop your team for the regular season, all right.
Well, I mean, I'm passionate about it. I'm a team owner on the Dago Dogs, and I believe in really character development. And, we use our 7-on-7 program to develop the person and the player. And so I think that you'll see a lot of the players that really – some of these guys aren't two-sport athletes. Some of them are. Like Herman Smith from Madison played with us, and he ran track and did 7-on-7 at the same time. So a lot of these arguments that people make in social media about, oh, I want to play two sports or I want to do that, guys, they're doing it. There's nothing taking away. It doesn't take away anything from a high school program for these kids to play on a travel 7-on-7 team. It just doesn't.
Well, I think it's different too, because like if you're playing baseball – and then you're playing travel ball, right? It's the same thing.
It's still
right?
baseball.
It's just the same thing. So it's like you're burning out your arm. It's not like in the springtime they're playing a tackle football league.
Right.
It's still different, and you're working on different things. It's like running track, and it's like, you know, you can get in shape doing 7-on-7, and you can work on your
it's
breaks,
work.
And you work on your cuts.
It's work.
What's the difference between 7-on-7 and playing basketball?
Right.
You're making the same moves. It's all the same thing. That's why I kind of treat 7-on-7 like its own little sport,
yep.
in my opinion. I think you agree with that.
I 100% agree with that.
And you got your little plug-in for your dogs or whatever your team is, of course. We've talked enough about Lincoln and 7-on-7 and all that fun stuff. Let's get to Point Loma. This is the team in the Western League I think we both can agree on is going to have a bad time and probably one of the teams that's going to get bumped down next year when they do the league switches.
You know, I'll say this. I think the most underrated player on that team is Caden Gill. I mean, the kid's done really well over the last 2 years. Running the rock, I think he ran for over 1,000 yards, receiving for over 400 yards last year. You know, they're that sleeper team, though. You know, a lot of teams, I think, are going to overlook them, and I think that's a mistake. I think they've got enough guys that are on the offensive line, defensive line, and a lot of skill position players that potentially could play upset and knock one of these teams off. It wouldn't surprise me if they knocked off a team that they were supposed to lose to, and they come back and win that game, especially at home. It's hard to play under the lights at home
especially
in Point Loma if you're visiting.
Small lights.
Yeah. Well,
wait, try to feel the punt out there when the ball goes
tough.
Above the lights. You're like, where'd the ball go?
So don't be. I would say this. Don't count them out because I think they're going to play spoiler for one of those open division teams, and they very well could.
Well, Point Loma to me is a team that, like I was going to say, even though I said they're probably going to get bumped down next year, I think there's a reason why they're in this league to begin with. It's not because they were some pushover team for the last, you know, decade or so. They just had a couple down years for sure. 5-6 last year. They beat Lincoln, Rancho Bernardo, and Ramona. Lost to El Camino, Otay Ranch, and Madison. I don't know how they lost to El Camino last year. It was a game-winning field goal, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
And it was at El Camino.
And it was at El Camino. So they get to host El Camino
travel.
This time. I got them beating El Camino. They play them week one, then they're at Ramona on the mountain. I don't think they win that game. Otay Ranch at Rancho Bernardo Olympian. I think Olympian's a win for them. Then you get to league play, and then the cross league, of course, is at University City. Are they the worst? Do they finish in last in the Western League, or they jump to four?
You know, they're probably going to finish in last. I mean, when you look at Madison Saints, Cathedral, you know, the teams above them, if you will, They're probably gonna finish at 5-5 and finish last. In any other league, that's, you know, second place, third place. But when you're in the Western League and they're dominating everybody in the Western League against cross leagues and non-league schedules, 5-5 is gonna put them in last. Doesn't mean they're a bad team. I still think they make the D1 playoffs.
They're in D2.
The D2 playoffs, and I still think they actually make a run in D2.
Well, they can. That's the thing, is their non-league schedule is not bad. It's pretty good. And then if they get through that, if they go 5-5, I expect them to get to the maybe the semifinals in D2.
I agree with that.
Because they got to play Cathedral, and by the time they play Cathedral, they've already played Centennial, Helix, Eastlake, you know, go
right.
through the list. They're going to play Lincoln. By the time they play Lincoln, Lincoln's a rip through Eastlake, San Clemente, St. Augustine. You know, they're battle-tested, right? St. Augustine, by the time that Point Loma plays St. Augustine in the last game of the season, they have played Lincoln, Cathedral, Helix, Loyola, Eastlake. I mean, Point Loma's going to be battle-tested just as much as some of these other schools, if not more than a lot of schools in D2.
The sad part for Point Loma is I think they go in the league in first place, and they finish the season in last place.
Do you think they go 5-5 or 5-0 before the season starts?
4-1. Maybe 4-1, 5-0.
4-1, and then they beat UC in the cross league.
Yeah. So they get to 5 wins there, but then they run into that gauntlet where they got to play Lincoln, St. Augustine, Cathedral, Madison, and I think they lose 3 or 4 of those games.
They got 2 weeks to prepare for Cathedral. Then they have University City. Then they have Madison, Lincoln, Saints to finish up the year.
Yeah. You got to stay healthy for those games.
Oh, absolutely. That is the problem with football in general. It's like, it's not like baseball where you can throw your ace and whatever and nobody gets hurt. By the time we get to league play, this could be totally, all these teams could be totally, like, drastically different.
Yep, 100% agree.
Let's get to St. Augustine. 10-4 last year, Division I CIF champions over Helix. They beat Lincoln as well, and I think they beat Steel Canyon, if I'm not mistaken, on this list. I just got to check real quick. It's cut off. They did beat Steel. Lost to Madison, Helix, and Cathedral. those are three or four losses. That's not a bad year from a year ago. Did not submit their JV record, did not submit their returning starters. They had some transfers in. They got a lot of guys. They got a lot of dudes. You picked them kind of to be their your number one team after you picked another team to be your number one team. So, but you make the case they're probably top three definitely in San Diego. Open up with Bonita, who they're going to absolutely dismantle tomorrow night. Then at East Lake, Loyola, at Otay, Helix, and then Morse is their cross league game before they get to league play. Another tough schedule for them. I think they're going to be really good. I think they can give Cathedral a run for their money. They're definitely going to be players in the Western League league championship saga, if you will. I got them at least going 8-2 this season.
I 100% agree. I actually have an 8-2 as well. There's two interesting games that I look at on their schedule. If they beat Lincoln and they beat Cathedral, obviously they're in the open. They're going to get a one seed.
Obviously they're league champions.
And they'll get the one seed in the open. And they should. I mean, with that schedule, that gauntlet, being in the Western League and who they got to play. Now, they lose one of those two games, what happens then? They drop to a 3, and they could even drop out of the open division if they lose both of those games. So whoever wins 2 out of 3 of those games.
And that's assuming they beat Helix.
Exactly. So it's going to be tough. I mean, it's not going to be an easy road. Now, here's the deal. I do think they are the most talented roster-wise in the entire county. I mean, top to bottom, you look at their offensive line. You look at Ann Baxter. You look at, you know, Richie Colmenero coming over. You look at Perez. They got two quarterbacks. They got a legitimate running back in Byron Cardwell, who's an absolute monster on both sides of the ball. As a sophomore, going into his junior year, he's getting D1 looks. You got Sammy Scave. You know, Sammy's out there every weekend mossing somebody and running crazy routes.
He did that against Helix in the CIF championship.
They've got arguably the best corner in the county with Tyson McWilliams. I mean, legitimately, he's got 7, maybe 8 D1 guys on his team. That roster is absolutely loaded, and they've got one of the best offensive lines in the entire county. So who stops them? That's why I said the Western League is going to be a dogfight when you get to last, like, 4 weeks of the season. These guys are going to go at each other, and you're going to see some really, really good football.
Oh, it's going to be fun from, let's see the weeks here, from about October 4th. Once October rolls around,
it gets real.
You have playoff baseball and Major League Baseball, and you have the Western League. I mean, that's point and simple, must-TV.
And listen, these teams don't like each other. Let's be honest. When you go to the Holy Bowl, I mean, if you haven't been to a Holy Bowl, go. Just to experience what the Holy Bowl is about. You've got arguably 15,000 people around this stadium. It's an experience. You got two Catholic schools that fight against each other. And I hadn't been to a Holy Bowl like in a couple of years. I went last year and it was incredible. Just the atmosphere, the people, the tailgating, everybody getting together. It's a great high school football experience.
The reason why the Saints Cathedral rivalry, I think, is the best in San Diego is because of the alumni support from both schools. And the thing is, it's fun, but there's a respect level to it. Because how many times have you seen a fight in that game?
I've never seen a fight.
Nope. All my years of being on the Saints sideline, at being on the Cathedral
sideline. No, there's a lot of trash
playing,
talking,
but there's never a fight.
Right. There's a lot of trash talking, but no fights.
And there's never a fight between the coaches. It's always a respect thing, and it's a fun rivalry game. Yes, they both hate each other, but they both respect each other. That's why what makes that game such a great rivalry. The other thing is too, it's like a lot of those kids on those teams. It's not as much now as it was before, but the majority of those rosters are still parochial school kids.
Absolutely,
and those parochial schools split in half. You either go to Saints or you go to Cathedral. You don't really, and then a couple kids go to public school. After that, but. A lot of those kids know each other for 9-10 years plus, either playing youth sports together, playing on the same parochial school, going to school with these kids for a long time. It's a fun game. Again, like you were saying, if you've never been to one of those games, you have to go. I was telling people here in this building at 97 that you have to go to that game.
Yeah.
It's not like any. I mean, that is the closest thing San Diego High School football is to
Texas Friday Night Lights.
To Friday Night Lights, because the game is packed, and that game is unbelievable every year. But it's not just Cathedral and Saints that don't like each other. That whole league is fun to watch.
All these
schools have been playing each other for so long, whether it be in the Western League, the Eastern League, the Harbor League that they used to be in. It doesn't matter. These schools have all played each other a long time. Point Loma thinks they have a rivalry with the Catholic schools. I know for a fact, you know, Madison and Lincoln can't stand the private schools. The private schools don't like playing Point Loma and all that. It's a fun. This is
there's a
fun
great deal
league.
Of storylines.
It's a fun league. You have the storylines in the Avocado League. They all hate each other up there. But this is arguably one of the best leagues. I would love to see Mira Mesa back in this league with Coach Thompson. He kind of got the...
He wants that league.
He doesn't
want to be in the Eastern League. He wants to be in the Western League. He feels like they belong there.
Well, I was about to say, he got dealt a bad set of cards, with the last couple of years before he took over. Mira Mesa just went into the tank, and they decided to switch the leagues right before he gets there, and Mira Mesa gets bumped.
Right.
But Mira Mesa belongs in this league.
Right.
And after last season, Mira Mesa would have been able to hang in this league. In fact, they did. They beat Madison.
Yeah.
So they obviously weren't the worst team in this league. It was just a matter of time before they turned things around. I can't wait to see Mira Mesa in that league. Forget it. Don't send anybody down.
Do they add a team or do they subtract a team or do they replace a team?
All right. So what I would do is I would just bump Mira Mesa up.
Just add them? Make it a 16 league? I would
make it a big league. I mean, because
Well, then do you add it and go west and east?
Do the cross league thing?
Yeah.
No.
No? Okay.
Here's my thing with the cross league. Are you ready for my cross league breakdown? Cross league was fun when I was playing, because when I was playing, it wasn't based on how good you were. It was just, I don't know how it was based on, but it was like, when I played, it was Patrick Henry, it was Scripps Ranch, it was Mira Mesa, it was Lincoln, it was Saints and Cathedral. Is that enough? That's six. That was our 16 league. And the other league had Point Loma, Madison, Morse, a couple other San Diego, section teams as well. You could do a cross league with that because right. Madison could have played one, two could have played two, three could have played three. It would have made sense. But when you do it based on the top six teams are in the upper league, and then you take, 7 through 12. 7 versus 1 is not a good matchup. The only matchup that's good is 7 versus 6.
Last year, I got to go see a cross league with Torrey Pines, and they played San Pasqual.
Yeah,
that was not. It was 45-0 at halftime. It wasn't fun. It was exciting. I don't think the kids enjoyed it. I mean, that doesn't help anybody.
The cross league last year, Cathedral and Christian, was a fiasco.
Yeah,
because neither team wanted to play it. Then they had the lightning thing, and then they were complaining about not being able to forfeit, and then all this other, and nobody wanted to play. They had to take that game off the schedule this year. 2 years before that, Cathedral's cross league matchup for 2 years was Scripps Ranch.
Yeah, that's
ain't
not
nobody
fair.
At Scripps Ranch wanted to play that game. Nobody at Cathedral wanted to play that game. When I was in high school, my senior year, it was the first year they started the cross leagues, we played Morse, who we were way better than, and we played Sarah High School. Those are two teams that shouldn't be on our schedule. And
right.
Those teams don't want to play that game, and the teams that are really good don't want to play that game either. You might as well just load the league up. Don't do a cross league. And if you need an extra game, just give them an extra week. Just right. Go have St. Augustine go play another team in Orange County. Have yep. Cathedral go play another team out of town. Lincoln's probably going to have to go find another game. All these teams have to play somebody out of town now anyway. You might as well just add another one to the list.
Agree.
That's my thing on the cross league. What do you do with the Western League?
I had two teams do it actually. I think you had two teams.
You get Christian too.
You know what? Yeah, I would add Christian. I think you go 4-4. I mean, Christian's been the benefit of being, which I don't really understand. They're an East County team, but they're in like the city conference, I don't get because
there's a lot of politics in that deal.
Yeah.
If you want the conversation, talk to Adam Paul of EC Preps. The thing that's weird with that whole deal is somebody is lying. Because all the Grossmont League coaches are saying, we'd love to have Christian, and yeah, we're not afraid to play anybody. And then the media guys that go to the same meeting as the Grossmont Hills League or the Grossmont League meetings go, no, because they bring up Christian every year and nobody wants him in the league. It's a weird thing with Christian being added to the Grossmont conference.
And then you got
the other thing too. It's like the Catholic schools and the private schools that are in the city league have always been in the city leagues, and they're run by the Diocese of San Diego. But then you start playing into the leagues, and most conferences are based on school districts.
Right.
So Christian's not in the Grossmont School District. So the Grossmont School District academic side's like, why are we adding this team to our, they don't see the athletic side of it,
right.
Where it's like, why are we adding this team to the league? They've had conversations in the Avocado League about adding Cathedral, and it never ends well.
Yeah, they shouldn't be in the Avocado League. I like them exactly where they are.
They're in the city limits of San Diego.
Yes.
They've always been a city school.
Yes.
Just leave them. I know they grew up north in Del Mar area, whatever. It's a city team.
Yep.
But real quick before because we got to wrap this thing up here. The whole thing with, I was talking with John Maffey, and they were talking about, realignment. What happens if the city schools don't want to play the private schools anymore?
Wait, hold on, though. Let me ask the honest question, though. You see these city schools ducking anybody?
No.
I don't. So all that talk, all that hoopla that you hear people talking about, listen, I don't see those city coaches ducking anybody.
I don't see the South Bay duck anybody. I don't see the city duck anybody.
I think those rumors.
I don't see the majority of East County ducking anybody.
So what are you saying, Todd?
I'm not saying anything. You heard the three conferences I said. But what I'm saying is
I hear a lot of conjecture.
There might be a thing with league alignment that's been tossed around where they might just place the Catholic schools in different leagues if they take them out of the city leagues. So they would go Cathedral in the Avocado. They'd put Christian in East County. But where do you put Saints? That's my argument against that whole thing, is that where do you put Saints? If they're not going to be in the city league, even though they're in the heart of San Diego,
right?
Well, you going to put them in the South Bay with Modern Day?
No. Modern Day's in South Bay, stays in South Bay. You have to keep Saints in the city.
That's, again, why are all the religious schools in the city conference except for Modern Day? Right? And then why isn't Christian in the East? There's so many different weird things with that.
It's political, Braden.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff above our... If me and you were in charge and we just had our way and said everybody said yes to us, we could probably make some sweet leagues.
I think we'd have a... playing fields is what I'll say. I think we would have even playing fields. I don't think you'd have the haves and the have-nots. I think you'd have competitive football across all levels, from the open division all the way around to D4.
It's more fun that way. Are you eight team open or four team open? Do you like the new
one? I like four. I don't like the eight. There were teams like, I remember that year I went, Torrey traveled to Cathedral. That was not a fun game to watch. I don't like the 8-1 matchup that first week. It's like you fight to get in the, and listen, nobody wants to be the eight seed in the open. Nobody.
Seven teams are fighting for the open, right, and then nobody like eight, wants nine, and eight. 10 are like trying really
if you're
hard
the
to
eight, let me ask you, if you're the eight, I tank that game so I can be the one in D1.
I'm not. You don't want. This is my.
I don't
want
to be the eight, man.
There's a lot of coaches though that want to win the best game.
No, there's not. Listen, they'll tell you that.
You think Chris Thompson's ducking the open so he can go win a D1 title?
I don't know. Listen, I'm not going to call out Chris. Chris is a friend of mine, so I won't call him out. But I'll say this. I'll say this. You know, there were a lot of criticism last year. Like, I'll be candid about it. There was a lot of criticism last year about Lincoln not playing because of injuries. They forfeited the game against Cathedral. Now here's my argument, okay? When the New England Patriots are getting ready to head into the playoffs and they're playing for a Super Bowl, they sit there, they're starters. Everybody's okay with that.
Yeah, right.
If I'm in a Division II program and I have no chance to get into the open, zero chance, doesn't mean if I win, lose, whatever, what do I have to gain besides bragging rights or bravado to go play Cathedral? So my argument is this. I think that was a smart decision for a head coach. You don't have to like it. I get it. But if I'm trying to go in a CIF championship in Division II, I'm not playing that game.
I understand that. Just don't tell them on Wednesday.
Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough. That's not like you're going through Monday, Tuesday going, yeah, we might have a chance, maybe not. And then Wednesday, all of a sudden,
listen,
you're like,
Come on. I wasn't in the coaching staff meetings.
I wasn't in the meeting either. I don't know what the decision was made. I don't know. You know, all the coaches at Lincoln could have said on Saturday, we're not going to do it, and then admin could have failed to tell Cathedral until Wednesday. Yeah, I mean, there's
I
so
know.
Many different,
I don't
there's
know.
So many parts.
But
so
I'm just saying, I wouldn't have played that game
I understand
either.
That argument. I'm just from the bench of, I just want to play. To me, here's
and
my
And I'll
thing.
Be honest, I mean,
here's
looking my... at his roster, he had, what, 26 guys? You think he's coming out of that game healthy?
No.
And winning a champion? Let me ask you this. If he plays that game...
He's not winning a champion.
Do they beat Mira Mesa?
No, I don't think so.
Do they go to state?
Somebody's going
to
get hurt in
exactly.
that game. Well, here's my thing with forfeits, and unless you have, like, 10 guys, we practice all year round. We do all the lifting. We do all the 7-on-7. We do all the August for 10 games. I mean, you're guaranteed 10 games. Some of these kids, this is it. Like, yep. This is it. And the kids don't, they will never understand this. And I never got it until it was over. But the thing is, it's like at the end of the day, this is it for them. That's one less game.
80% of your roster. This is it for them at the end of the season.
Make the argument for most teams. It's 90% of their roster.
Agreed. I mean, I'm being generous.
Right, but it's like that's it. I mean, you're never going to play football ever again. I mean, is it fun to get your butt kicked? No, it's not.
No, they.
But there's a lot of kids. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that, you know, here, I'm going to give you the other side of it.
Okay.
There's a lot of kids at Cathedral that busted their tail the entire summer, that busted their tail throughout the entire season. That is a game that they could get into because they're going to get their guys in quick.
Right.
And Sean knows the writing on the wall. If the game, and if they talk before, hey, man, we got 26 guys, you know, gentleman's agreement type of deal, they're not going to run it up on them. And guess what? They're going to get kids in.
You know, I thought that until I watched the game last year. There was a city team that played an El Cajon team, and I think it was like 57-0, and the guy was throwing for the end zone, and it was 57-0.
Every situation is different.
Fair enough.
Right? I mean, you could, come on. I mean, it's like, think about some of the schools that want to get kids in that have a lot of kids. I mean, that's the other side of the argument for me is you know,
You're right. I gotta give Coach Doyle his respect. I mean, he's a very respectable coach, and I don't see him running it up on anybody. I don't see him, you know. I think he'd do the right thing. He'd pull the starters and let some of the guys.
Even
get in.
When I've been part of that program, and even when Cathedral needs to obliterate someone for state recognition,
he won't do it.
He won't do it. He just won't do
he's
it.
He's a class
and,
act.
Yeah, but again, I can't say that for every other coach in the county.
Exactly. So that's my argument.
So I understand.
I can't say that for everybody.
It's like, look, it gets not only like, here's the other thing. You could just sit all your studs and then just have your kids play if you're Lincoln, if you wanted to. And just have it and just be like, hey, look, what about this? What if you, it's probably not, say, it's probably like, you're, it's probably liable and all like the legal stuff. But like, what if you just forfeit the game and then you just play a game that doesn't count? Just get your kids reps.
I mean, that's possible.
I mean, but that's, again, that's a gentleman's agreement.
CIF wants that gate.
Right.
At the end of the day, let's be honest.
You could still have a gate for it.
You know, CIF is not going to give up that gate no matter what.
That was fun, Chris.
We got to wrap this up.
We got to wrap this up. We've been going to 47 minutes strong. It is the Western League preview, though. You got to go along with the Western League. It's going to be one of the top leagues in San Diego County. We also don't have a coach's interview for this league podcast either. He is Chris Smith, Top Dog. I'm Braden Soprano. We'll be at it, I'm sure, throughout the rest of the year. But you got one more thing to say?
I do. Are you not entertained?
I know everybody's going to be fired up for the high school season after listening to this. Thanks again for joining us on the High School Football Podcast, breaking down the Western League. Be sure to check out all our other podcasts. And, of course, check us out on 97.3 The Fan. He's Chris Smith, Top Dog. I'm Braden Soprano. We'll see you guys next time.